Hi, everybody. Alan Arnett here with another podcast on the blog on alanarnett.com. It is Sunday, May 12th. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Well, it is summit season on Mount Everest, and it got kicked off with a big bang a few days ago when a team of 10 Sherpas from seven summit treks got the ropes up to the summit, thus opening up the route to everybody else, all the commercial teams. And, you know, this is what we expected. As soon as the ropes get to the top, that we have a mad rush of people that head up, and no disappointment. This morning, again, Sunday, May 12th, a team of 20 from seven summit treks, consisting of seven foreigners, supported by 13 Sherpas, they summited. That's a pretty good support ratio, isn't it? It's 1.8 Sherpa to every foreigner. So not quite sure why it took 13 of them to get seven to the top, but nonetheless, that is kind of the way it goes these days. Amongst those who summited on that seven summits team was Kami Rita Sherpa with his 29th summit. So he's collecting them like there's no tomorrow. More than likely, I won't be surprised to see him go up for his 30th again this year, but we'll see. And then from England, Kenton Cool, who is now 50 years old, he got his 18th summit, extending his non-Sherpa summit record, far surpassing that of Dave Hahn, who retired back in, on his after his 15th summit, said he'd kind of seen enough of Mount Everest and was going to move on to do other things. Of course, Dave Hahn is a mainstay up on Denali, and so he'll probably be guiding again this year up there. I don't know how many summits he has on Denali, but it's probably in the 30, 40, 50 range. It's just crazy. He really loves that mountain, loves guiding up there. So congratulations to Kami Rita and to Kenton for their excellent summits. A few other people made it to the top. 8K had a couple of people get up there, 8K Expeditions. Imagine Nepal. They had nine clients that summited, supported by 10 Sherpas. That's a more reasonable almost a one-to-one ratio there, which is what I'd like to see more often than not, because I just think we have too much support on the mountain these days. So, you know, unless you're using like an extra oxygen option where you need a second Sherpa to help carry that extra oxygen, I don't really see a point in it. Moving on, this past week, we had a really sad news with Lhapka Tenji Sherpa, age 53, also working for Seven Summits Treks. He had summited Makalu, and they were descending, and he told his teammates that he didn't feel well, and he passed away near Camp 3 on the mountain. So tragic loss there. My good friend Jamie McGinnis, he told me that he said he was a kind, caring, genuine person. He was just absolutely great to work with. He was a true gentleman. So my condolences to Lhapka Tenji's family and friends and teammates on his passing. Everest ER, they've already seen over 500 patients, but of those 500, only 80 are non-Nepali, in other words, foreigners. The rest are the local people, Sherpas and people from the local community, and they've treated all sorts of stuff. They've had eight patients with pulmonary edema, one with cerebral edema, and many acute mountain sickness symptoms that they've all been able to treat. And it looks like the regular old Khumbu cough is going around as usual. You know, the Khumbu cough is where you're breathing the dry, cold air, and it irritates the alveoli in your lungs, little air pockets, that little tissue that really makes your lungs work. And so they get irritated and causing you to cough. You know, it can be really severe. People have actually broken ribs from coughing so hard with the Khumbu cough. So it's not this trivial thing. And the best way to prevent it is to wear a buff over your mouth and nose to heat the air up before it goes in into your lungs. But nonetheless, this kind of business as usual, if you will, around Everest and all these other 8,000 meter mountains. So that's kind of a wrap up of what happened in the past week. The ropes got up, you know, 35, 40 people summited. So looking forward to next week, I think we're going to see a slew of summits. It looks like that the winds are supposed to pick up around May 15th, 16th, midweek next week. So right now there's at least three major teams that are already up at the South Col, IMG, climbing the seven summits. They've got three teams, and one of their sub teams is already up there. And then let's see who else is up there. Alpine. And Ascent Himalaya. They're also up at the Col. So we're going to see just a bunch more, probably, you know, I wouldn't doubt it if we see 50 or 60 or 70 summits Monday morning, tomorrow morning, May 13th. And then I think it'll calm down for a couple of days, let this wind event get by, and then we'll see the second summit wave pick up at the towards the end of next week, starting around Thursday or so. So again, by my count, there's about 600 people that are going to be heading to the summit on the south side. That's made up of about 250 clients. And now over 400, 414 receive permits, but typically there's about a 40% drop off. So that's the reason it goes from 414 down to 250-ish and supported by an average 1.5 Sherpas. So that's where I get the 600 number. Could be wrong, but typically I'm pretty close to these estimates at this point in the season. Talked to Michael Fagan at Everest Weather. He provides weather forecasting, has done it for decades for teams all over the Himalaya. And he says right now there's nothing of substance brewing in the Bay of Bengal. As you know, that's where the typhoons build up. And typically they build up in May, mid-May. So about right now. So it's good that there's nothing happening at the moment. At least he doesn't see anything of significance through May 21st. So that should bode well. And he thinks that the winds are going to be decent, especially starting after May 19th. So hopefully we'll have a good weather window season like we did last year, where we had the entire month of May where the jet stream was missing. It's getting more and more difficult to forecast the weather these days. But, these guys, Mark de Keyser out of Belgium, and Chris Tomer out of Colorado, Michael Fagan out of the Seattle, Washington area, they all do a fantastic job of keeping their clients informed about the weather so they can make well-informed decisions. Also, I forgot to mention that the first person to summit, first foreigner to summit this year after the rope team was a Ukrainian climber, and there is no way I can pronounce his name, but I believe it goes Valentin Sapovin. He's 41 years old, and he became the first one to summit this spring. He was climbing with Sanu Sherpa, and Sanu is his claim to fame is that he has summited all 14 of the 8,000 meter mountains twice. So he's the only person that have done that. Let's see. And then already talked about the other people that summited. So again, looking forward next week, we're going to see a lot of people heading up the mountain Kanchenjunga, another one of the 8,000 meter mountains. My good friend, Adrian Hayes, we were on K2 together in 2014. He let me know that they tried to go up for the summit, but there was too windy and too much snow. So the entire team turned around, but they're going to give it another go. So we'll see what happens when Adrian and that whole group goes up for the second time on Kanchenjunga. Another notable summit this past week was by a team on Garrett Madison's organization of Madison Mountaineering, and they summited Nuptse. So, if you think about the Western Coombe, typically when you're looking going up towards Lhotse, it's right in front of you, and Nuptse is the mountain to the climber's right. It's a very difficult climb. It's very rocky, very rock fall prone, and the summit itself is heavily corniced. Now, last year, Garrett was able to get a few people to the top, and they did it again this year. Cacho Beza, he was the guide, and Casey Denier, along with four climbing Sherpas, Dawa Tenji, Kami Dorji, Cheetan, and Mingomar, they all summited. So six of them got to the top of Nuptse. Again, rarely summited, but looks like Garrett is now kind of creating this little sub-business and doing what's called the Triple Crown, and that's Nuptse, Lhotse, and Everest. So a lot of people go and do Everest and then followed by Lhotse. Not a lot of people go for Nuptse because of that danger. So good on them. Congratulations for getting that done. Okay. One of the things that's kind of interesting at this point in the season is that you've got people that are summiting, and then you've got people still back down at base camp, and they're just kind of hanging around waiting for that next weather window to come up. If they chose not to go up after the rope team. And this is really usual for most of the commercial teams, especially the Western commercial teams, that they'll hold back and they'll be one of the last ones to go up sometime in the May 19th through the 21st. The sweet spot historically has been May 19th. That's on more summits than any place else, any other day throughout the entire year, May 19th. So that's kind of the sweet spot. It looks like it's this year. It may turn around and be that once again. So I expect to see a lot of teams will be leaving base camp here over the next couple of days, go up to camp 2, spend a couple of nights, then head up to South Col and make their summit push. But, you know, there's a lot of anticipation that goes on. So let me just do a fairly brief narrative about that anticipation through the eyes of a climber sitting at base camp. So you've been hearing about the infamous summit window for years. In the last few days, that's all you discussed. At breakfast, the table talk went like this. So, do you believe the forecast? You throw it out to everybody at the table. You mean the one that said we're going to have clear skies and no winds the day the cyclone hit us? Somebody laughingly answered. Well, yeah, that one. But, you know, if it's right that we're going to have a weather forecast of clear skies and no wind, we leave the day after tomorrow for our summit push. The whole table gets quiet and each person looks into their sloppy porridge. There's no need for a lot of words. This is why you're here. Each person is lost in their own private world for the next few bites. You've heard the talk from the lead guide about being ready for this moment at a moment's notice as the weather forecast changes quickly. Your guide, she took great joy in telling the story of a few years ago when they got an update at 9 o'clock at night, Everest time, from the States, which is 11 hours and 45 minutes earlier. I don't know what's up with that 15 minute difference. Anyway, the story goes that everyone had gone to their tents after being told the weather was horrible out up high and there'd be no summit push for at least a week. They'd done their nightly routine, crawled into their sleeping bags with their toes nudged up against a bottle of hot water to keep their toes warm. They had completed their last crocodile roll in their sleeping bag around 10 o'clock and were just drifting off to sleep when, like Paul Revere, the lead guide came urgently into the member area shouting out, "Hey everyone, if you want to go to the summit, this is your chance. Pack your summit pack and be ready to leave base camp at 2 a.m. Whoa, talk about whiplash. That was only 4 hours from now. Well, you were ready. You know, you've been ready for the past 3 years. When you saved money, put off the big purchases, trained on lesser peaks, and pushed hard to get your body in shape. In the last few weeks, it's all come together. Yep, the first climb to Camp 1 was slow. You thought a few times that you weren't up for it, but you pushed on. The next trip up to Camp 2 was better, but then the Lhotse face. Lucky you, it was hard blue ice this year, but no snow steps were kicked in for it. It seemed like it took you to get forever to get to Camp 3, but you did it. And you didn't, but you didn't sleep there like the other teams sometimes do. The new thing is that you don't have to punish your body with that horrible night at 23,000 feet in order to acclimatize. You get to 7,000 meters, have a snack, get some water down, and return to Camp 2. Now, you're ready back at base camp. And the weather window has emerged. So leaving breakfast earlier, you skip the regular group chat for some alone time. Sitting cross-legged in your tent, you look at your summit gear spread out on the tent floor. You get that 1,000-yard stare in your eyes and you begin to visualize the next few days. The last climb through the creaky Khumbu icefall, up the hot Western Khum, then the steep Lhotse face. You only know what you've read and been told. You leave Camp 3 before dawn. Continuing up the face, you turn left towards the yellow band. Clipped into the fixed ropes, you scale the limestone rock and then to the base of the Geneva Spur. You scramble over the spur to the exposed rock of the South Col. There you spend a few hours resting on oxygen and you leave just after dark, maybe 7, 8 o'clock. Some teams leave as late as 10. You go up the pyramid face to the balcony and then the southeast ridge, which no one ever talks about, but that's the hardest part of this entire route between the balcony and the south summit. You reach the south summit and then you go down and you go across what's called the Cornice Traverse where it drops off a mile on each side. You're happy it's going to be dark. At least that's what you've been told. Then you're going to go up whatever's left of the Hillary Step. Some people jokingly today call it the Hillary Slope, after that 2015 earthquake destroyed the traditional step that Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay overcame. But from the step, it's just a short distance to the top of the world. You know the music, but do you know the words? Can you sing the song? Can you keep up with the band? Can you do it? Sitting in your tent, all of a sudden your frozen stare locks onto a picture of you placed in a tent mesh pocket 3 weeks ago when you arrived. You focus carefully on the faces of your family in the picture. You look into their eyes, half expecting them to say something. You listen carefully, and then you hear a voice. "We love you. We believe in you. We'll be with you each step. You are where you should be, we believe. Locked in the moment, you give yourself permission to go somewhere else. The change of scenery feels good. Your breathing is calm. It's controlled. You're at peace. Each item on the tent floor has its own place in your pack. You slowly and methodically organize your kit. There's something comforting about the familiarity of this routine. You've done it many times as you've trained for Everest. Some of the gear you pick up and you cradle in your palm of your hand. Yes, this will keep me safe. Then you put it in the same place as before, deep in your pack. Eventually, the tent floor is clear and the pack is full. Rolling over onto your unzipped sleeping bag, you lie down and stare at the ceiling. Closing your eyes, you hear the sound of base camp, Everest base camp. The hiss of a gas stove, the chatter of teammates still talking trash. Sherpa, Nepalese language. You still have a hard time telling the difference, but you enjoy the cadence. The strength and the confidence in their conversation. Off in the distance, you hear the gentle tone of a yak bell. You know the huge furry beast is probably nodding off as we approach midnight. The sounds of the camp act like a soft sleeping pill as you go to that place between sleep and awake. Knowing your time is soon, the anticipation builds and you take one more breath and then you go to that place of sleep. Soon, you'll be climbing Mount Everest. Climb on. This is Alan, and remember, memories are everything.